practices are repeated actions that help us grow in our love for God and our neighbor, listen to the Holy Spirit, and become more like Jesus. And faith practices are for ordinary people of all ages, no matter where they are in their faith journey. If you're longing for a deeper, more life-giving faith, you're going to love listening to the conversations in this series. Each guest shared stories of how their faith is being shaped through a particular faith practice, along with an idea that you can try at home. Join us on the bench as we wonder about the faith practices. Open to Wonder starts now.
Amy Peterson's understanding of hospitality, a practice she believes is at the heart of Christian identity, was formed during an experience she had as a 22-year-old living in Southeast Asia. More recently, it's been shaped by the details she discovered while researching the biblical story of Lydia, in the conversations with the students with whom she shares a meal each week, and in the hands of the unhoused man who offers her candy over breakfast. Amy Peterson is a writer, teacher, and priest in the Episcopal Church. Her most recent book, Where Goodness Still Grows, imagines virtue as untamed, embodied, relationally negotiated, and a tool for cultivating hope. Amy lives in Asheville, North Carolina, with her husband, children, and three cats. And we can't wait for you to hear our conversation with her about hospitality, identity, and yes, kitty litter.
Amy Peterson, we are so glad you're here today to talk with us about hospitality. As we said in the intro, both Chris and I loved your book, Where Goodness Still Grows, Reclaiming Virtue in an Age of Hypocrisy. We loved it so much. And we especially appreciated what you shared and about what you were learning about hospitality in your chapter on hospitality. So we're really excited that our listeners get to learn from you too today. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. As I said when you emailed me, I turn down most podcast interviews these days because my life is too full. But when you said you wanted to talk about hospitality, I was like, well, okay. Yes. I can't turn down a chance to talk about hospitality.
Oh, that is so great. We're so grateful. So we're going to launch right in. I'm going to open with, this is kind of the definition that we're kind of using in the Faith Practices Project, which we'll link to in our show notes. But so the Faith Practices Project, that's where we describe the faith practice of hospitality as the act of making space for guests, visitors, or strangers, and extending to them the privileges of family. And then we kind of explore it in that project in terms of offering food and shelter and protection. But I suspect when most people think about hospitality, they think of it in terms of being welcoming to newcomers or hosting someone for a meal. And then we might even think about it as a gift, right? Like, oh, she makes a great pot of soup and hosts a lovely dinner. She's got the gift of hospitality, mm-hmm. right? And then, mm-hmm. so either you have it or you don't. And I'll be completely honest, until we started working on the Faith Practices Project and I took a deeper dive and read your book, as someone who doesn't like to cook and is kind of introverty, I always thought, well, I guess I don't have that gift. So you say in the book, there's more to the practice of hospitality than friendliness or food and Martha Stewart dinners. Can you say more about that? You talk about it as having a posture of emotional, physical, and spiritual openness. So yes, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I love your definition that you've come up with. I think that's beautiful. I think for me, I started rethinking hospitality a while ago. I mean, it was probably 10 years ago, and I have two kids. My husband and I had decided two kids was the right number for us. And then I was away for them for a few weeks, and I started to think, oh, maybe two kids isn't enough. You know, when you get that distance, you're like, oh, they're so sweet. It's like when they're sleeping. You're like, oh, they're so cute in bed. Maybe I need more, right? But as I interrogated that feeling I was having, I realized that what I really, it was a fear I was having. a fear that one day they would grow up and leave and my house would be empty. And what if I had a Christmas one year and they both were off with in-laws and not with me? And so I had this fear that someday my house would be empty. So as I started thinking about that and praying about it, I felt God kind of nudging me to think, well, there are plenty of people who need a place to go at Christmas time or a family to be with. And so just giving birth to more children is not the only option here. And also, you know, anything that's motivated out of fear rather than out of love is definitely something to question. But that was when I started rethinking hospitality. And, you know, when you think about it that way, which I think is a common way to think about hospitality in Christian circles, hospitality to babies is something that we really value a lot. When you have a baby, that puts an intense amount of, it takes an intense amount of effort. You're up in the middle of the night with the baby. You are like literally giving your body. But when we think about hospitality to other groups of people, we don't think about literally giving your body or being up three times in the night to help take care of someone. But maybe we should. Maybe the hospitality we offer others ought to be as great and demanding as the hospitality we offer to our babies. So that was when I started thinking about that openness. And I think that that's something that we see throughout scripture is a call from God to God's people to be open.
You developed that idea a bit in the book to come to the point of saying hospitality is at the heart of Christian identity. And most our conversations about Christian identity don't touch on hospitality. So could you unpack that a bit, the identity, hospitality, and how those go together?
I mean, I think part of the reason we don't link those often is because, like Karen was saying, we have this sort of very limited picture of hospitality, that it is, you know, having a Pinterest-worthy home and serving Martha Stewart perfect meals. Yeah, being an extrovert, inviting people over, knowing how to host a lovely dinner party, which is a wonderful thing. And I love to host a lovely dinner party, but that's not really what hospitality, that might be part of hospitality. But when we think about the stories that are foundational to our understanding of our faith, we think about Abraham having guests show up at his tent and he welcomes them in and they tell him his wife, Sarah, will bear a child. Right? Because he welcomed those strangers in, he got that message of a promise from God. We think about the laws that were given to God's people in the book of Exodus and Leviticus, and how many times God said things like, you know the heart of a sojourner or a stranger, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. Yeah. They had that experience of needing help, and that's what made them open to giving help. Their experience of vulnerability was key to their understanding of hospitality. And in fact, if you count all the command to care for the stranger is repeated 36 times in the Torah. And that's more often than the command to love God is repeated.
Wow.
I mean, so what's at the heart of being a follower of God? Yeah. According to the Torah, maybe loving the stranger is more important than loving God. Maybe loving the stranger is how we love God. And of course, that's not just an Old Testament practice, but over and over in the New Testament, Paul says in Romans, seek to show hospitality, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you. And that word that we translate hospitality, it's philoxenia, which comes from the Greek words for love and stranger. So rather than xenophobia, Christians are called to demonstrate philoxenia, love for the stranger. We are to love strangers like our sisters and brothers. It's over and over. Peter says it, Hebrews says it. Don't neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. It is from the very beginning of God's people all the way through to the end. Hospitality is part of what we're doing, welcoming strangers in.
Could you maybe share a bit, because the way you're describing it,
It's the act of extending hospitality is actually shaping us. It's not just making room for others. It's actually doing something to us as you're talking about it. So I wonder if you could share a little bit about how you have been formed by extending hospitality.
Sure. But I think first I have to tell the story about how I was formed by receiving hospitality. Okay. Because this is really sort of the most formational thing in my understanding of hospitality is when I was 22 years old, I was living in Southeast Asia. I was teaching English as a second language in a small town to university students. And one weekend, I lived about 20 kilometers from the beach, which was a great perk of life there. But one weekend, I drove my little electric motorbike to the beach for a retreat. And as I was driving back to my apartment in town, my electric motorbike started slowing down. And I eventually realized that the hotel proprietors who had been supposed to plug in my electric motorbike overnight had not, because they didn't want to pay for the electricity. And so I was, you know, 10 kilometers from home, rice fields on this side, rice fields on this side, not another car or person in sight. And my motorbike was just going put, 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 and about to die. And at that moment, I passed a hut in the middle of the rice fields and recognized it as a hut I had passed the day before. And I'd spoken with the woman who lived there for a moment. I didn't know her. We just spoke as I passed. And so I just pulled in and went up to her door and said, "Can I plug in my motorbike?" And she didn't speak very much English and I didn't speak very much of her language, but we communicated enough and she let me plug in and she pulled out a machete and chopped open a coconut and gave me that coconut to drink. And, you know, we talked as we could for an hour. And I often thought about that after I came back to the States, how she had no reason to trust me. She didn't know me. I had come out of nowhere. And she opened her door and her house to me. She shared with me what she had. And how many of us would do that? If someone just knocked on our door in need, we would probably respond out of fear rather than out of openness, mm-hmm. Or a willingness to help. Where I live now, I drive by people on the road every day who are asking for help, homeless folks or people mm-hmm. who are traveling and have run out of gas money. And how often do I actually stop and help them? Yeah. I don't. I respond out of fear, not out of faith, I think. So I think that experience of receiving hospitality has really helped me coming back to the States to think about what it might mean to give hospitality. And I do love throwing a party, but I've had some opportunities to give more hospitality than that. When I was teaching at a Christian college in the Midwest, one of my students got kicked out of her home by her parents. They cut her off financially after she told them that she was gay. And so she moved into my basement for almost a year. And that was a gift to us as well as to her, I think, because she shaped our family life and became sort of like a little surrogate daughter to me for a while. And really, it was because of my relationship with her that I started to rethink a lot of things myself. And the next year after she had moved on, started hosting a weekly dinner for gay students at this Christian college who didn't have any other safe place to go. And their faith, their willingness to continue wrestling with a church that had largely rejected them in that context was one of the most inspiring and inspiring things I experienced over my almost 10 years of teaching at this school, to have these students who were so repeatedly rejected by the church and their families show up and want to talk about Jesus' love and keep showing up really strengthened my faith.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that's so powerful, Amy. Thank you. And I love, you know, you before you shared those stories, you talked about how loving the stranger is a way, it's how we love God, right? And in the Faith Practices Project, we talk about something that always, it reminds me, there's a picture book called, if you give a mouse a cookie,
a mouse right? a cookie,
he's
yeah.
probably going to ask for a glass of milk. And if he asks for a glass of milk, he's going to need a straw, and it goes on and on. And I always think of that book with the faith practices, because we talk about how one of the things about the faith practices is when you so practice hospitality through your love for your neighbors, it deepens and strengthens your love for God. And as your love for God is deepened and strengthened, mm-hmm. you love your neighbors better, which strengthens your love for God. So I love that. And I think your stories both illustrate that. So thank you for sharing that. You talk about another story in your chapter about the story of Lydia. And when Chris and I read that, we were like, oh my goodness, did you see what she says about the story of Lydia? Like, you just added so many beautiful layers to that. So for our listeners, Lydia is the woman described in Acts 16 in the Bible as the dealer of purple cloth who extends hospitality to Paul following her baptism. But you learned a bunch about Lydia that was new to you, and it was certainly new to me, and it really taught you about hospitality. So can you say a bit more about what we can learn about hospitality from Lydia's story?
You know, I remember hearing Lydia's story in Sunday school when I was a little girl, and always hearing that because she was a dealer in purple cloth, that meant she was very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is a possibility. But as I was researching it, I learned that Lydia's name is what's called an ethnikon. That's a name given to a slave that describes their nationality. So Lydia was likely a freed slave from the city of Lydia. That's where she got her name. And when she had received her freedom, she had probably been forced to migrate. Because if she continued practicing the trade she had practiced as an enslaved person, she would be like an economic threat to her former enslaver, right? So she was freed. She was forced to move. And then the fact that she was a dealer in purple, well, dyeing fabric was not the work of the upper classes. This is basically how you did it. You got huge amounts of animal urine, and then you needed the animal urine to mix with the dye from the snails so that the fabric would take the dye. It needed the animal urine. So if you were working in a dye house, you were working with animal urine and wow. seafood snails with your hands. And so Lydia probably had stained hands and forearms. She probably smelled. And when it says Lydia and her household, they were probably a group of immigrant women who were working in the dye house as a kind of subsistence occupation. So just making enough money to live. But Lydia was a God-fearer. And so on her day off, she went down by the river looking for someone to pray with. And that's where she ran into Paul. And after Paul preached to her, she immediately accepted what Paul said. She and the other women with her listened to him and were baptized, and then prevailed upon Paul to come stay with them. Now, this is the thing that really turns the whole picture around, because when you picture Lydia as an upper class woman inviting Paul to come stay with her, that's one thing we all imagine. Of course, I have a guest room. I would invite right. Paul to come stay in my guest room. Lydia's inviting Paul to come stay with a group of immigrant women who smell like animal urine. She is not inviting him out of her own excess. Yeah. She is inviting him out of having very little to give. And so I think that is very convicting for me when I think about, well, you know, I don't want to invite people over. I'm a little bit embarrassed that my living room is so small, or that I still have this bathroom from the 1970s, which is a true fact. And not only that, it has a kitty litter box that three cats use. My one bathroom that I can offer to a guest smells like kitty litter and hasn't been updated since 1979. I don't want to invite people over. Lydia reminds me, that's not what hospitality is about. It is not about having some excess that you can give to someone. It is about having an openness to make connections because of Jesus with other people. And Lydia, it says she prevailed. That means she needed to be forceful. Maybe Paul needed to be convinced. And so on the other side, who am I willing to accept hospitality from? For the last year, I helped run a breakfast ministry for mostly unhoused folks. And we met for breakfast 3 mornings a week. And some of those guys would sometimes try to give me things, some candy that they had or, you know, whatever. If I ever don't accept that because I think you need that more than I do, I'm in the wrong. This is also, I should be willing to receive hospitality, even from someone who seems to be giving out of their lack, not out of their abundance. Mm. And so sort of recognizing in myself in both of those places, as Lydia, being willing to invite people over, even if my house is not something I want to show off. And as Paul, being willing to go, even if it's to a place that feels a little uncomfortable or smells a little bad. I need to be willing to be in both of those places.
When we talk about faith practices overall, part of what we talk about is being attentive to the Holy Spirit in the midst of this. And I think the way you are engaging this biblical text, you're entering into a dialogue with the Spirit about the text and about your life. Mm-hmm. And that is so beautiful, the way you're engaging that story and saying, how does that impact me and where do I fit in this? And what part of Christ's character do I need to grow in still? So that's beautiful. Thank you.
It's a beautiful story.
Yeah. One of the things we do towards the end of our conversations is we ask kind of this open-ended question, but more practice of something that you could say to somebody else. So we'd love to hear if you could leave the listeners with just one small step, one thing that they could do to become more intentional about this faith practice of hospitality. What would you suggest?
You know, I saw this question on the email you sent me, mm-hmm. and I thought, I can't leave them with just one step. I'm going to leave you with 2 levels of options.
Okay.
Okay.
Love it.
So level 1, invite somebody over for dinner. I mean, I know I've just spent quite a bit of time saying hospitality is not just having people over for dinner, but I've also had 3 people in my church in the last week come to my office to tell me how lonely they are.
Mm.
And these are people who are at church every Sunday and often at some midweek event and often serving in some way. And still they're so lonely. Yeah. And I think they're lonely for spiritual friendship. So invite somebody over, and I would recommend looking for someone who maybe is single. Invite somebody over and ask them about their life and share honestly about your life. So that's level 1. That is your basic mm-hmm. first step of hospitality. Here's level 2. Maybe if you are more inclined to think about systems or policy, this will be the answer for you. You know, the census that just came out showed that 3 million adults were displaced in 2022 because of climate change. 3 million adults moved last year because of climate change. And globally, about 20 million people are displaced every year by climate-fueled events. This kind of migration, climate migration, is happening now and is only going to be happening more in the future. And one of the things that I'm committed to is being involved in housing policy where I live to make sure that there are places where people can move.
Yeah.
I live in the mountains of Western North Carolina, and a lot of what's projected for migrations of climate refugees for the future is coming from the coast, the southeast coast, right up to where I live. And where I live, housing prices are at an all-time high and have spiked dramatically in the last 3 years. If I hadn't had family funds I could borrow from when I moved here last year, I would not have been able to purchase a house. And that feels wrong, right? Yeah. So I am committed to being engaged in at least knowing what the housing policies are where I live and advocating as I can for there to be housing that is affordable and accessible, especially as we anticipate climate migration coming into this area. So get involved as you can, educate yourself about housing policy and for housing prices.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for level one and level two. that's so helpful. And the story of, you know, the kitty, like level one, even though you may have the equivalent of kitty litter somewhere in your house, right?
Yeah.
So helpful. My kids are listening going, okay, but you were that mom who said, I've invited the Smiths for coffee after church. All four of you, the instant we drive into the driveway, these are your assignments. Wipe the stove, clean the bathroom, flush the toilet. Like, you know, and so.
Well, that's some basic politeness. I think that's fine.
Basic, flushing the toilet. Okay. That feels significant, but just this idea, I mean, honestly, when you go to someone's house, you don't care. Right. And so this reminder, people are lonely. We're surrounded by people who are lonely, and we're surrounded, you know, level two, by people in crisis. Mm-hmm. And, if loving the stranger is a way that we love God, how can we not do that? So thank you for broadening our understanding, both broadening and narrowing it for us, Amy. This has been, this has just been hugely, hugely helpful. And we just appreciate your taking the time. We recommend to anyone who has not yet read Amy's book, Where Goodness Still Grows, get it. It's amazing. And thank you. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And yes, I hope people do read my book, but I also should say that I wrote a tiny booklet called Open Hearts, Open Homes, which I think you can get for free or for like $1.99. It was published by Our Daily Bread, and it's just about hospitality. Oh, so that's great. another way to go if you don't want to spend $10 on a book.
That's great. We will add that a link to that in the show notes so we can point people to that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a delight, and thanks for doing the good work that you're doing.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. If you're interested in exploring how your faith can grow through faith practices, be sure to take a look at our new user-friendly book with a super, super long title, Faith Practices: Holy Habits That Help Us Love God and Our Neighbor, Listen to the Spirit, and Become More Like Jesus. It's published by faithaliveresources.org, and it's a fabulous resource for individuals and small groups, no matter where you are on your faith journey. Stay connected with us on Facebook and Instagram at CRC Faith Formation, on Twitter at CRC_FFM, or send us an email at faithformation@crcna.org. You'll find links to all of the above and so much more in our show notes. And as always, if you've enjoyed this episode of the Open to Wonder podcast, please leave us a positive review. Until next time, keep practicing.